This is SR1.
Talkative. Magazine on air.
Trust me, I'll be so good for you, baby.
Hey guys, you are listening to Talkative Magazine on Air, part of SR1 Sundays here on News Talk STL. You can check us out every week at 10 p.m. Sunday evenings live, or you can catch episodes that you missed on our Spotify, on the News Talk STL website, or on Rumble on SR1's page. So please do. We have lots of fast episodes with lots of hot gossip that I'm sure you don't want to miss. Emily, what's new this week? Anything?
Well, I thought I would keep up with the trend you were trying to start last week. So
Ooh. We've
got a meme of the week.
Okay, cool. I pitched a segment.
You pitched a segment. Well, we'll see.
We'll see.
I was sifting, trying to find a meme that could be explained without a photo.
Yes.
And that's a little difficult.
It is. Last week was very particular. It was about garden hermits.
Right. Which I still wish I could have seen a photo, to be honest. I feel like a photo would have completed it. But
maybe we'll post it to our socials.
This seems appropriate for our audience and for this station. So I've got one for you. I'll try to sell it. I'll give it my best shot. Okay.
Meme of the week.
Meme of the week. If Kamala Harris were a sign, and then it's an actual photo of a sign on a door.
Mm-hmm.
It says, "Notice, the patio is currently not open because it is closed."
That's pretty good.
There you go.
I like it.
Yeah.
Is that like a somebody's failed Halloween joke?
You go up to
somebody's door and you say trick or treat, and they say, "Oh, do you have a joke for me?" And
they
say, "If Kamala Harris were a sign,"
Kamala. I don't know. I always want to say Kamala.
It's
because it's a made up name.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, I got to be honest, that really wasn't my type of humor, but I did my best to keep up with your trend. So there you go.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
I feel you. Not typically our vibe in terms of jokes, but I do appreciate it because she is just a babbling idiot. Yeah, I got nothing good to say about her. So I went down a weird rabbit hole and I kind of just want to take you on this journey with me.
Yay.
So I saw, I get a lot of like suggested throwback videos in my algorithm on Instagram and Facebook and wherever, just because clearly I like nostalgia. Mm-hmm. So I got this video. It was a song that I think we've actually played on the show before, Us Against the World by a band called Play.
Yeah.
And yeah, if you don't know it, I'm going to play a little bit of it for you.
I love this song.
Yeah. It's just like early 2000s girl bop. Okay, so here, gotta play a little bit of it just so you have a feel.
Okay, so until like two months ago, that was one of my alarms in the morning.
Oh my gosh.
So unfortunately, it's got a new association in my brain when I hear it play. But
so what popped up for me was the actual video for this song. And Emily, when we played this on the show, I think we were both kind of freaking out about how young the band members looked, because they're all, I think in real life they were between the ages of 12 and 14, but they look about 10. And they, I mean,
I know,
in my childhood I thought they were like teenagers, and now they look like babies. And anyway, I was scrolling the comments on this video and people were like, "Why did I not remember they were so young?" But someone had commented and they were like, "I was always so jealous of them for having Chris Truesdale in the video from Dream Street, R.I.P. And I was like, wait a minute. That's a lot of info. Okay, so Dream Street was like this boy band, right? And the only reason I really know Dream Street is because I saw commercials for their, like, you know, CDs or whatever. And Jesse McCartney came from Dream Street. So that's his origins.
But really?
That's all I know about them, really. So I was like, wait, Chris Truesdale, who's that? And then I wanted to see if he was cute, to see why they were fangirling. So I looked him up, and sure enough, they said R.I.P. He passed away in 2020. And I was like, wait, whoa, weird. Okay, so what happened? He was young. He was 34. What happened to Chris Truesdale? So this is the rabbit hole I went down. What happened to Chris Truesdale of Dream Street? And if you need a little Dream Street refresher, this is their number one song according to Spotify. I'm going to play just a little bit of it. I think I might know this one, so let's see.
Can you hear the music playing? Can you feel the rhythm swaying? This is the sound of dreams come true. And I can promise you that you are the one and only. And I'm the lost and lonely. We are the perfect dream come true. And I can promise you that I hear a silly.
Okay, I'm gonna cut it there.
I can't say I've heard it, but it certainly sounds just on par for exactly what it is.
It does. I was hoping to get to the chorus sooner. I don't want to waste a lot of time on this, but I think I might know it by the chorus. The song is called It Happens Every Time. If that gives you an idea of what you think the chorus might be, because I think I might know it. But anyway, so that's Dream Street. And they're, you know, probably comparable in age to the girls that were in Play. But Chris Truesdale, so I looked him up and he passed away in 2020 at the age of 34. And every headline I was seeing was Chris Truesdale passes away from COVID complications. And I don't know about you, but I'm a little skeptical of that as a headline, especially because I don't know, when we were going through the whole COVID thing back in the early stages and everyone was like genuinely worried about it, right? And we all, you know, were like, oh, maybe we need to leave our groceries outside for 30 minutes as they get delivered, and we're all wearing masks and we're all, you know, isolated and there's no one driving on the streets because apparently driving is not safe. You know,
well, you're good if you wear a mask.
Right. So like that stage of COVID. And I just remember thinking, why aren't we hearing of all these celebrities dying? Right. Like if everybody's dying, if the death rates are so high of COVID, why am I not seeing famous, famous people passing away of this? Right. Because like they would. Right. It's a pandemic. Right. And so I'm thinking, OK, well, that's weird. And now finally I get a name of somebody that passed away 3 years after the fact.
Like D-list.
And yeah, like somebody that's really not super relevant anymore. Right. He's not a name I knew. And every headline is pass away from COVID complications. And none of the articles explicitly say what that means. They're not like, oh, he was suffering from blah, blah, blah. So I go on Wikipedia and I'm looking at, you know, to see if they break down, because a lot of times they give like the mini bio, you know, and like, here's how his career started. Here's, you know, death. And sure enough, on Wikipedia, they say that it was reported by his, I guess, sister-in-law that it was COVID-19 complications, but his other family members said an unspecified illness. And if you click on the link from that, it turns out that it was maybe complications of strep that he died. Right, which is also bizarre to me. I think it's very common for 34-year-old, you know, I assume he was healthy, people to die of strep. But I'm looking and I'm like, but why is it that every article I'm seeing lists COVID-19 complications? And then I see, you know, that I told you Jesse McCartney was in the band with him when they were teenagers, that there was this post after he passed away from Jesse McCartney, like, hey, you know, we were basically like brothers. We were in this band together for 3 years when we were kids and grew really close. And I'm just like so devastated, you know, so sorry to lose one of, you know, these great people to COVID-19 complications. And I'm like, oh, okay, so Jesse McCartney put this out there. Jesse McCartney is the one that perpetuated this rumor that apparently no one in his family has corroborated except his sister-in-law, which seems bizarre to me. And I don't know. I have no further info on this. I never got to the bottom of it.
Yeah.
But it just struck me as so weird. I'm like, okay, it's been 3 years, you know, and in the moment we were like, we must, if it's a pandemic, we should be hearing about, you know, everyone that we care about should be losing loved ones to COVID-19. And no, not even, you know, I find a D-list celebrity that maybe died of COVID, but also he didn't. So I'm not really sure, but just struck me as super odd.
Well, that is really weird because I mean, it would be also equally bizarre if he died of strep. Like, you never hear of that.
You never hear of that. But I guess, I mean, it is a thing that you have to treat with antibiotics. So maybe it's like a thing that if you, I don't know, I'm not a doctor and I've never had complications of strep. But maybe it's one of those things where if you think it's just a sore throat and you never get
treat it.
Yeah, maybe it spreads as an infection and then you have some kind of, you know, I have no idea. And then maybe it's one of those things where he had that and then got COVID on top of it. And then they listed it as a COVID death or whatever. But I just thought, wow, how freaking bizarre is that? That, you know, this 34-year-old, like, D-list celebrity is the only person that I know of that, quote unquote, died of COVID. But I can't even corroborate that.
Well, at that time, everyone was dying of COVID, no matter what were truly dying from. So it's not weird that that was the... cause of death, right? You know, because that was everyone's cause of death, apparently.
Well, sure.
But I don't know. That's sad and frustrating, too, because it's like, I don't know. It's just kind of this reminder of this separation of classes, kind of. You know, you're right. Nobody major, no big celebrities were passing away of COVID. But these former celebrities, these has-beens, sure, they were. Or passing away of something. Or maybe, who knows? But, right, like... I don't know. It's just kind of...
I know.
Something's just off about it. It doesn't feel right.
Speaking of celebrities that, well, in my mind are kind of has-beens, and this this has an update. So last week, a week and a half ago, I saw a headline that was Succession star Alan Ruck was in a car crash. And I saw the picture that went with this headline, and I thought, wait a minute, I know him. Why do I know him? Because in my mind, he's not a Succession star. He is Cameron from Ferris Bueller. And
So, yeah.
So I was like, okay, I guess I know Succession is wildly popular. But come on, like, Alan Ruck is Cameron. Like, why are we listing him as Succession star? Like, he is Ferris Bueller's Day Off star.
That's
Alan
the only Ruck. Thing I know him from.
Exactly. So anyway, I saw this headline and I was like, car crash. And I'm like, crap. You know what happens when it's a celebrity car crash? It's always DUI, drunk driving, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Well, at the time that it was reported, they had no details. And basically, they were reporting, like, he seemed fine. No one was seriously injured. It was like a 3 or 4 car accident. And I think a couple of people went to the hospital, but everybody was fine, including Alan Ruck. And I just looked it up again to see if there was any update on that. And there is. And I think this is really interesting. So he was driving a Rivian truck. And Rivian is like Tesla. If you don't know what Rivian is, it's an electric vehicle. They're a smaller company than Tesla, but same deal.
Yeah.
Which means they're very high tech, very new, and, you know, very, very expensive. So obviously, like, a celebrity would be driving one. But apparently what they're chalking it up to is some kind of technology malfunction. And you can watch the crash footage online. And it is bizarre.
Like, wait, why is there footage?
Like a stoplight camera or something.
Oh, okay.
It's like, it's kind of grainy, but you can see what's going on. And and they point out his car and you can see his truck just like ram into another car. And that car spins out. And then two other cars that are in like the... you know, lane that's, you know, passing them or whatever, get hit. And so it's like a pretty big deal. And I think he drove through a window of a pizza place or something too. But anyway, apparently it was like a technology malfunction and everyone's like, yeah, there's, you know, like that sounds fishy. And I'm thinking like, but is it though? Because we like, these are very new cars and there's so many settings. And also, apparently, with the Rivian trucks, there's like 3 different kinds of all-wheel drive. And depending on what setting you're in, it can go from 0 to 60 like freakishly fast. And so I guess it's just like if you don't know exactly what you're doing and what buttons to push and what to press, like it's not out of the realm of possibility in my mind that this could go totally haywire on you.
Yeah, I don't know why anyone would be so adamant that that couldn't happen.
Right.
Why are you so trusting of the car's technology over a manual, you know, driver.
Well,
I mean, I don't know. I'm skeptical. I've recently gotten into a newer car myself, and there's perks and there's convenience and there's comfort, but I was holding off as long as possible because I like having more control over the machine than the machine has over me, I guess, you know?
Well, I think it was actually a Jordan Peterson quote that he was talking about Teslas, and he's like, you know, we call these smart cars, but like, don't fool yourself. That's not a car. A Tesla is not a car. It's a computer.
Right.
Like,
exactly.
It is like, you know, it is driving you, and at any moment it can take over. Like, it can get hacked. Somebody could take it over. They learn, right? You know, these self-driving Ubers. It's scary territory. I don't know what the answer is on that, but it freaks me out. And when people are so overly trusting, that freaks me out more.
And I bet no matter what the truth is about this accident, it'll probably not come out.
Well, probably not. But I will say that the police are not pressing charges, and they are leaving it up to the insurance company to sort out. So okay. Sounds like they're very much on the, it was the technology.
Okay.
Well, when we come back, we've got some op-ed discussion going on. Just stick with us.
Talkative. Magazine on air. My favorite way to touch you. Talkative. Magazine on air.
Hey, hey, thanks for sticking with us. We are getting into segment two now. I think, Anna, you have an op-ed prepared for us, right?
I do. So let me set the stage for this a little bit. I have been down a rabbit hole.
Again? Another one? Come on, yeah. Alice.
I know. Well, okay, this one's been like a long time in the making, though. So you and I have been on like a health journey, I would say, kind of rewiring the way that we approach beauty and things like that,
yeah,
and the medical system and all these things. And that looks a lot like swapping out for cleaner products and, you know, that kind of thing. But for me specifically, I think a lot of it looks like questioning birth practices and what that looks like in a hospital setting, which is the conventional way to do it, versus a home birth and, you know, everything in between. And I am definitely one of those people that, you know, I had my first child 2 years ago, and leading up to birth, I was very much like, oh, I would never do a home birth. Like, you know, that's crazy. That sounds like so unsafe and so complicated and all of this. And since that time, my mind on that has changed a lot. And I definitely have a lot of feelings about the way that hospitals intervene with a process that your body is literally designed to perform, right? Like, women have been doing this forever. For centuries and centuries, mammals do this all the time, you know, and yada, yada. Well, I came across this video and I want to get your thoughts on it because I don't know where I stand in terms of what this woman has to say. So I'm going to play this clip and then we're going to talk about it. But to set the stage, it's about the way that we talk about birth, the way that we like set up our medical system to handle women in labor. Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. So here's the clip.
You know why unassisted or autonomous birth is so frowned upon? It's because this system, the hierarchy, the patriarchy, the order of things is predicated on the submission of women. Women meet their most powerful selves in autonomous birth. And if more women did that, we would simply overthrow the government. Like, it's all designed this way. It's not like the system is broken. No, this is exactly the way the system is supposed to work. It's set up this way. The system, whatever you want to call it, needs women to be broken in childbirth. Because if they're not, if they meet their most powerful selves, they will arrive in motherhood empowered and dangerous. Really dangerous. And frankly, men can't have that. Men cannot have that because they can't compete with that.
She sounds like a hippie.
Well, could I set the stage for you? So what she's doing in this video while she's telling you that, she's sitting in her car with a newborn on her shoulder. And in the background, it looks like she's parked in a pasture. It looks like she's parked in like the middle of nowhere. as she's telling you this. Anyway, initial reactions, thoughts?
I think she's a whack job. I think she sounds... I mean, listen, I think home birth is probably how we all should be doing it. Let's be real. I mean, like you said, our bodies are designed to do this. I can't say what my decision's going to be when the time comes.
Sure.
You know, it's going to be scary, and there's a lot of conventions now that we expect us to go through in the hospital and all that good stuff, right? But we are able to do it without that. It's how we were designed. However, I don't know about overthrowing the government and being considered dangerous just mm-hmm. by doing what women do. I wouldn't describe that. And I wouldn't want us to be that way. I want to know where she's connecting those dots from. I'm going to give birth to my child naturally, and then I'm going to overthrow the government.
I'm with you on that. That took a turn for me too. I think she lost me when she said the word patriarchy right at the beginning.
Well,
but that aside, besides just blaming men for the fact that we now birth in hospitals and we intervene consistently with a natural process.
Right.
I do think there's some truth to what she's saying, because I do think that, like, the birthing system, the medical complex, you know, going to a hospital, having all of these checks and, you know, having a due date. And if you go past your due date, it's like, that's just a guess. A due date's just a guess based on, you know, the size of the baby at, you know, a 10-week checkup or whatever, right? Gestational age. You're just guessing about when that baby may come. But that doesn't mean that, like, that you're overdue, right? That doesn't mean that you have to have that baby by then. I think there's so many things that we do that instill fear into the process, that make women inherently not trust
right. their intuition.
Their intuition, right? Because if you were, you know, and I, not that this is a great example, right? But TLC used to have a show like, I didn't know I was pregnant, right?
Well, this is funny you mentioned this, because I just sent you a video earlier today.
Oh, you did?
You didn't listen to that video I sent you about...
Oh, wait. No, I did.
Thank you.
Okay, yeah. sorry. Yes, but it's like, okay, right? Like, if you don't interfere with what happens when your body grows a child, most of the time it just grows the child. And then when it's time for that child to evacuate, they do. Like, you just give birth and that's what happens. And if you didn't know any better and you're not instilling fear the whole process, right? Then you're not worried about, like... What if something goes wrong? Like, what if I'm, you know, measuring big? What if baby's measuring small? What if, you know, there's like yada, yada, yada. Most women can carry a full-term healthy baby with no complications, minimal complications. And we used to have a system that had midwives and, you know, people that were trained to do that. And now we have a bunch of doctors that, you know, want you to push on your back. They don't allow you to switch positions. You can't have a, you know, birth tub. Like, at a certain point, you have to get on the bed. You can't eat or drink. You are restricted in all these ways. And it's like, well, what part of that seems natural? What part of that seems like what we should be allowing our bodies to do in this process? And that's, for me, like, why I feel so differently now than I did 2 years ago when I had my first child, which
right.
is... You know, there were things that I allowed to happen because I was a first-time mom, and I was like, oh my God, what if something happens to my baby? Like, I'm going to follow every bit of advice I get, because obviously these are trained professionals. Like, they know. And in hindsight, I'm like, well, that didn't need to happen. That didn't need to happen. And if I hadn't allowed those things, then we wouldn't have gone down this path of blah, 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 intervention, right? And
yeah, they definitely take advantage of mothers' fear and,
yeah,
you know, priority to keep their baby safe. So then they make sure that you feel that you need them in order for that to be true.
Yeah.
So I definitely obviously agree with all of that and what you're saying. But the language that this woman has and mm-hmm. how she speaks on it, I mean, I don't know, like, empowering women. I don't know, something about the phrasing empowering, like,
it's unfortunate.
I know what she means, and yes. It's true. Imagine if we all stopped allowing people to interfere with our intuition, and, you know, we weren't second guessing ourselves and our nature and our abilities. If all of that weren't the case anymore and we were confident, we were sure, we trusted ourselves, that would be amazing. That would be amazing for each and every woman out there, and the effects of it would be noticeable in society, I'm sure, as well, and how we enter motherhood and how we approach it as a whole. But the way she speaks on it.
But is it men's fault?
No.
And that's the thing. I don't know why she's coming to that conclusion. Because to me, it's like, okay, like, you know, yes, we're instilling fear. And like you said, you know, we're creating a process in which, like, yes, mothers are very afraid and they feel like they have to rely on medical professionals every step of the way, or else they will be at a loss, or they will lose the baby, or, you know, the list goes on and on. And the question to me then is, well, why would that be the case? What's the end goal? Like, wouldn't it be easier for everybody involved if you needed fewer hands on deck, right? Like, if you could just say, like, yeah, it's going to be me and a midwife in my living room. Isn't that easier than having a team of, like, 8 nurses and a doctor in a hospital room and, you know, a bunch of, you know, tubes hooked up to you and an epidural and a whatever, blah, blah, blah? You would think so, but then what's the goal? Well, one, I think she's got it wrong. I don't think it's men. I think it's that our medical complex is, you know, run in a way that it makes money.
Exactly. So it's just greed.
It's greed. And it's not the doctor's fault in and of themselves, because they're not the ones making, you know, money every time you have an intervention. But they do make the hospital money, and they work for a hospital, and the hospital knows what that costs. So they put protocols in that are, you know, okay, well, at this many weeks, you have to come in for an ultrasound. At this many weeks, you have a urine test. You get a blood test. You have these vaccines. You have the blah, blah, blah. And
in their field, with everything that they do see every day, they probably do think they're giving you the best that they can and the best that is out there in a lot of ways. And in a society, because I know we've touched on this before, but in a culture, in a society here in the United States that is trying to keep us all sick, you know?
Well, that too.
We do not have the healthiest things at our disposal. In fact, far from it. You know, the easiest, most accessible things to consume, to interact with and clean with and in our hygiene routines, everything's bad for us. So, yes. You know, that being the case with how sick as a whole we are as a society, doctors do see the worst. So, you know, they probably are thinking and believing, most of them at least, that it is very safe, and with all the complications they've witnessed firsthand and had to intervene in, they probably believe that they're doing something good.
And in their mind, it's definitely easier if they can control the variables, right?
Right.
It's so much easier for them to schedule a C-section than it is for them to be on call when your water breaks and you're waiting for contractions to be so far apart. And then maybe you up and you're, you know, not really in labor, you're in early labor, so they have to send you home, but they had to have a doctor there to check you. Or maybe you're about to have the baby and now they have to pull a team together last second. So, like,
that's true.
It's easier if they can control those variables, right? But that doesn't make it safer. That doesn't make it better. It just means that that's the way it runs. And I don't know. I think the only thing she might have a valid point on, maybe a little bit, I'll give her a little bit of credit, is that I did hear this recently, and I thought this was super interesting. So if you think about the history of birthing, right? Obviously, midwives used to be the common practice. Like, we didn't have obstetricians. We had midwives, and we had women that were in the, you know, town or whatever, and they knew what they were doing because they birthed a lot of babies and helped other women in the village do it and whatever. Well, I guess it was probably about the time of the Salem witch trials. Those were the women that were treated as witches. Those are the women that were burned at the stake and were hung and, you know, yada yada. And we vilified midwives. And so in doing that, we took away, like, the powerful women essentially in the, you know, hierarchy of society, and we made them out to be, you know, practicing witchcraft and doing dangerous things, and then it became frowned upon to do those things.
Yeah.
And we turned then to, you know, doctors, which were mostly men,
right?
Right, and so we did take away, right? Like, who knows how to birth a baby better than a woman,
right?
Right, that should follow naturally, I think. And I think we went for a long period of time where it was very uncommon for women to be involved in the practice. the way that they had been previously. And when you take that away, then you lose something inherently. So right. maybe in that way, maybe she's got a point about the patriarchy. But
sure.
But we're talking about something far removed from now. And, you know, how do we get here? Maybe that's part. But
yes, yes, I do agree. Like at some point, rewind far enough back. It was a man's world. Like,
mm-hmm.
so yes. But sure. today, now it's just greed and convenience on the part of the business that is hospitals. And
bad training for our yeah. doctors who don't get training in what to do if a woman has a breech baby and what to do. And, you know, yeah. if she wants to birth not on her back and, you know, things like that. And it's just interesting to me that as far as we've come medically, so many of our practices are stunted and I just
don't follow logic.
Right.
How is it? It's a shame that I do agree with you. And I can't say when. I don't know if your, you know, perception of it starting at the Salem, you know, witch trials is the accurate
sure.
time frame. But I know what you mean. Yeah. That, you know, medicine from nature and midwives and all that stuff has really been taboo for a very, very long time now. And yet it makes a lot of sense, doesn't it, that we would turn to those things?
Yeah, I think we are seeing a return to those things,
yeah. though,
which I think is a good thing. I think it's becoming less taboo and more acceptable to kind of follow your own path on this one, which I think
agree.
Is good.
Which is, yeah, it's exciting to kind of explore and see what's out there in that natural field. Now, we're going to get to a break, but when we come back, I'm really excited because I have a Who Sang It Better, and it's unlike anyone that we've done before. So stick with us and find out what I mean.
Talking to you. SR1 Sundays. Talkative.
I still feel like a man.
Oh. Magazine on air.
I still feel like a man. Oh. I still feel like your man.
All right, guys. Well, Emily promised us something really new and different on a Who Sang It Better. So as sad as I am to talk over John Mayer grooving out.
I know.
I'm gonna let it slide because I'm really curious what you've got lined up for us.
Before we get into that, I have a quick question for you.
Okay.
Hopefully quick. I don't know.
Oh.
John Mayer or Taylor Swift?
John Mayer, 1,000%.
Just check. I don't know. I just gotta check.
You mean in their relationship?
I don't know what I mean.
Okay.
You're supposed to know what I mean.
In their relationship, he's very much older than her. She probably couldn't handle it. So for that reason, I guess I'd lean Taylor, but she's a dummy for that anyway. And like in terms of musical talent or personality or funniness or style or anything, John Mayer, like easy. Not even a question.
Okay. Well, yeah. It was a question.
Well,
look at that.
Yeah. Mm. Anyway.
I have a Who Sang It Better. Yes. So this was a little different and it's actually got a few parts to it. So first up is going to feel like a traditional Who Sang It Better. Okay. We've got an original and we've got a cover. So back in, I actually don't know when I discovered this cover. The original, however, is well known. It was very popular. So the song is called Better Now by Post Malone.
Oh.
I know that's so random. And I know you're not a fan of his, and that's fine. But it was a catchy, popular pop song that was
sure.
released in 2018 as a single off of Post Malone's second album, Beer Bongs and Bentleys.
Wow.
I didn't know that. And
what a beacon of light.
Wish I didn't know that. But the reason I'm highlighting a song that is an artist we don't really care about is because a few years later, or that same year, I don't recall, I actually came across a cover of that song on Spotify or something. I really don't know. But also in 2018, a cover was released of Post Malone's Better Now by an artist called Blanks.
Okay.
Like B-L-A-N-K-S, Blanks.
Okay.
And it's very specifically what he calls a style swap. So it's if Better Now by Post Malone was an 80s hit.
Oh, okay. That sounds fun.
So that's what we're going to listen to. So okay. I'm going to start off with Post Malone's version. So y'all can hear that. And then we'll get into Blank's 80s version. Oh,
wow. I can't wait.
All right. Here we go.
You probably think that you are better now, better now. You only say that cause I'm not around, not around. You know I never meant to let you down, let you down. Would've gave you anything, would've gave you everything. You know I said that I am better now, better now. I only say that cause you're not around, not around. You know I never meant to let you down, let you down. Would've gave you anything, would've gave you everything.
I'm so sorry, you guys.
I'm so mad that you made me listen to that.
I'm sorry. But listen, hey, if you're out there and you've never heard this song, you're a little more cultured now. Because, hey, this is what the kids were listening to in 2018. Now you know.
You're going to call them more cultured
for hearing
that? You
know what? Now you know. Because if you didn't, well, now you do, okay?
No, if you didn't, good for you for not being bombarded.
This is just what was in college, right? I just heard it all the time. It was life, okay? Now here is the 80s version by Post Malone.
No, by Blanks.
By Blanks. Thank you. By Blanks.
Okay, that's much more enjoyable on the surface, but I have thoughts.
Okay, tell me your thoughts.
All right, well, I think my first thought is I'm a big voice person. Post Malone has nothing going for him. I'm not a fan of that song. I'm not a fan of him. He looks like he smells. He's very unattractive looking guy.
Yes.
And his lyrics and his music are brainless to me. Okay. So that's my Post Malone pitch.
Cool.
If I switch to Blanks, my first thought was like, I'm so excited. I want to see what he does with this. It's going to be more melodic, obviously, right? Like as an 80s pop song, it'll be more melodic and catchier and fun. But it just sounds like he needs to swallow. Like I just want him to swallow that bubble in his throat.
That's, I hear you. Okay.
Yeah, that's what I wish. He would just like clear his throat and then try again. And then I'm sure I'd probably really like it. But
and in contrast to how Anna described Post Malone as looking, Blanks looks very, in his video, very 80s, preppy, very straight out of probably Chesterfield, if you're St. Louisan, you know. So that's his look. I don't want to keep going for too long, but let's just hear a little bit more of each of these, and then I'll get into that next part. So back to Post Malone's Better Now.
I did not believe that it would end, no. Everything came second to the band, so. You're not even speaking to my friends, no. You knew all my uncles and my aunts, though. 20 candles blowing out and open your eyes. We were looking forward to the rest of...
I'm going to stop there.
Please
I'm
do.
So sorry. But you know what? I'm going to stop apologizing because, you know what? The world should apologize to me because that is what the youths in my day were listening to, okay?
I know. I know. I just remember that song being everywhere. Like you'd go to Target and you couldn't avoid it.
It was everywhere.
It's like, yeah, I know. Yeah, I'd never listened to the lyrics so closely, though. Like, wow, really? You know all my uncles and my aunts, though? you're really hitting me hard, Post.
So let's go back to Blink's version.
Okay. My brother's like, it's Jonas.
I don't know the lyrics.
No,
goodness.
Come on. Yeah. That's the reason that the Jonas Brothers put Post Malone in their one song.
I just thought they were doing that because they're always trying so hard to be cool.
I know. Yeah. But no, that was because it was a nod back to him for doing that to them. But yeah.
There you go. So Anna, between these two, who sang it better?
really, you know, I know you think I'm going to pick blanks, but I really don't know here because the problem is the lyrics. Problem is blanks' voice. I got nothing good to say here.
Okay.
I don't. Yeah. I guess I'm going to give it to blanks for trying to do a thing with a song that deserved nothing. So.
Right.
Yeah. I guess I'll give it to blanks.
So I'm also going to choose blanks. I think, okay, his voice might not be what you want, but I think it's a no brainer because.
Yeah.
Because hello.
Right.
But I'm not done. So next up, we've got, I came across this guy just a few days ago, really random. He came up on my Instagram. His name is Izzy Perry.
Okay.
And he,
I like the name.
Yeah. So similar to blanks, he has his own songs, his own music, but he also dabbles in fun covers that are stylistic choices, including he did a little series on Instagram of songs that he decided would sound cool as 80s songs if they were in like the classic 80s slasher films. That's how he was marketing it. I wouldn't market it that way. To me, they just sound like 80s covers, but that's how he was marketing it for Halloween time.
I guess, is that supposed to mean like cheesier 80s songs than like, not like 80s pop in a, you know, like this is a classic, really good Tears for Fears kind of way, but more like, oh, this is, you know, teeny bopper 80s.
So I wouldn't say teeny bopper. To me, it's just very new wave.
Okay, fair.
So you're going to see what I mean because I'm going to play it. So I'm going to pick, there's a few to pick from. I'm going to go ahead and do Avril Lavigne's Complicated. Okay. We'll do that cover. So I think everyone knows that song, but let me play a little bit of Avril's and then we'll play Izzy Perry's 80s slasher movie cover.
Okay.
She yelling for, lay back, it's all been done before. And if you could only let it be, you would see. I like you the way you are when we're driving in your car and you're talking.
Okay, my bad here, because I started that song at the beginning and I probably should have started at the chorus, but you guys know the song Complicated by Avril Lavigne, right?
Well, do we want
to just, should I jump to the chorus?
Yeah, why don't we just jump to the chorus?
All right, so now let's listen to Izzy Perry's cover, and it's just a clip. It's just an Instagram clip, right? So all here right. We go.
What?
Okay, I do get the slasher thing.
Okay, it's very, they chose different routes, these two different guys in their 80s covers. But regardless of that, Anna, that's our 80s clip for Complicated. Which do you prefer? Who sang it better, Avril or Izzy?
Oh, Avril, 1,000%. That's actually a good song. But I just think he's leaning on the effect too hard. And the deep voice actually doesn't fit the style to me at all. I think he's like doing a weird effect that takes away from the mood he's trying to set. It sounds to me like a modern song that thinks he's doing something really different, but is actually leaning heavy on 80s influence and doesn't acknowledge it.
So it doesn't sound like genuine 80s. Correct. It sounds like
a lot of these like alternative kind of bands that are popping up that are doing things like that to me. But I do get the slasher vibe. It did sound like creepy, like, you know, she's running through the, you know, haunted house and the clown's going to get her.
Yeah. And I mean, if you think of the lyrics, too, that he's singing, you know.
Yeah. You fall and you crawl and you break and you take.
Except. Yeah. So. All right, I totally agree with you. For who sang it better here, I pick Avril over Izzy. But I just thought these were two fun comparisons to see how two different guys interpret what they think sounds like a quintessential 80s, because there's obviously a lot of different genres within that decade and different ways to go.
Definitely.
So last but not least, I want to just go head to head with two of their little clips real quick, just so you can pick. So we're going to do Taylor Swift's Style by Izzy again. So sticking with Izzy for a second. Okay, so that's his version of Style to sound 80s. And then we're going to try Blank's 80s version of Ariana Grande's Thank You Next.
Okay, this should be interesting.
I don't have an obvious comparison for who Blank's is mimicking. I would definitely say Izzy's doing a Depeche Mode kind of thing.
I guess so, yeah. But I feel like, to me, Blank's has a better grasp on what he's trying to do.
I agree. And I think he's got more like layers. Whereas Izzy, I think, has just got one specific thing, then it's all relying on the effects.
And it's all relying on the voice effect. Yeah. And it's not really musically doing anything. So... yeah.
So head to head between the 80s covers,
I'd have to go with Blank's for the Ariana cover.
I think I do too. I just think he is trying to be a little more creative, and he's playing the keyboard and he's doing more.
But I have to say, I think these are both probably what our mother felt like when we were dressing up in 80s costumes. And like, that's not what we actually wore. I feel like that's what this is.
They're kind of almost parodies in and of themselves, you know?
Yes, which they're trying to be, I'm sure. But
I hope you enjoyed the different take, even though it was a little peculiar and not the best pop music that we were basing it off of. But we appreciate you listening. So,
yeah, stick around next week because we've got a whole big mashup of SR1 Sundays coming at you. So, see you then.
Talkative. Magazine.
She says, come over. I'd like to get to know you, but I just don't think I can. Cause I still feel like you're mad.
SR1.